Stella. Vasta samrodana klamam. Prasasham su hrishikesham. Yirbi pranjalayo nripa. Okay. Translation by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. The ecstasy of beholding Lord Krishna, having dispelled the weariness of their imprisonment, the king stood with joined palms and offered words of praise to that supreme master of the senses. 8. Rajana Uchu Namaste Deva Dvesha Pramanarti Haravyaya Prapanam Pahina Krishna Nirvinam Gora Samshrite. Translation. The king said, obeisances to you, O Lord of the ruling demigods, O destroyer of your surrendered devotees' distress. Since we have surrendered to you, O inexhaustible Krishna, please save us from this terrible material life which has made us so despondent. 9. Nainam natu nasuyamo magadam madusudana anugraho yad babato ragyam raja shayutibo. Translation. O Master Madhusudan, we do not blame this king of Magadha, since it is actually by your mercy that kings fall from their royal position, O Almighty Lord. Purport. It is significant that upon seeing Lord Krishna and thus becoming purified of their sins, the kings did not feel any mundane hatred or bitterness toward Jarasandha, who had imprisoned them. Simply by seeing Lord Krishna, the kings came to the position of Krishna consciousness and spoke these verses, which show deep spiritual wisdom. 10. Raja Ishvarya Madonado Nashreyo Vindate Nripa Vanmaya Mohiton Nitya Manyate Sambado Chala. Translation. Infatuated with his opulence and ruling power, a king loses all self-restraint and cannot obtain his true welfare. Thus bewildered by your illusory energy, he imagines his temporary assets to be permanent. Purport. The word unada indicates that one who is intoxicated by false pride goes beyond the boundaries of proper behavior. Human life is meant to be governed by dharma, spiritual principles for gradual advancement to the perfection of Krishna consciousness. Blinded by wealth and power, however, a foolish person does not hesitate to act whimsically against the laws of nature and God. Unfortunately, this is now the situation in the prosperous Western countries. So please responsibly, text 11. Mirga Krishna Myata Bala. Manyanta udakashayam, evam vaikari kim mayam, ayukta vastu chakshate, mriga trishnam utyata bala, manyata udakashayam, evam vaikari kim mayam, ayukta vastu chakshate. Please chant. Mriga Krishnam yata bala manyantu dakashayam evam vaikari kimayam ayukta vastu chakshate mriga trishtam yata bala manyanta udakashayam evam vaikariki mayam ayukta vastu chakshate mriga trishnam yata bala Manyanta Udakashayam Evam Vaikarikim Mayam Ayukta Vastu Chakshate. Mothers? Mirga Trishnam Yatabala. Manyanta Udakashayam Evam Vaikarikim Mayam Ayukta Vastu Chakshate. Mirga Trishnam Yatabala. Manyanta Udakashayam Evam Vaikarikim Mayam Ayukta Vastu Chakshate. Mirga Trishnam, a mirage. Yata, as Bala, men of childish intelligence. Manyante, consider. Udaka, of water. Ashayam, a reservoir. Evam, in the same way. Vaikarikim, subject to transformations. Mayam, the material illusion. Ayukta, those who lack discrimination. Vastu, substance. Chakshate, see as. Translation. Just as men of childish intelligence consider a mirage in the desert to be a pond of water, so those who are irrational look upon the illusory transformations of Maya as substantial. Hare Krishna. So Krishna has performed what is described as being, in the course of history, the most liberal act of mercy in releasing these 20,800 kings and princes from all around the world. They'd been captured by Jarasandh and kept in a fortress cave. So one can imagine the extent that must have been of the of that cave to have been able to accommodate so many living entities. But these kings, actually, they had been hitherto not exemplary devotees. And we know that because, according to what? How do we know that? According to their own confessions. They were not exemplary. They had been involved in what they described their previous activities is a complete condemnation of modern leadership. They described that they'd been involved in killing innocent people and luring innocent people to be killed. This is how they described their previous activities. And they considered actually their imprisonment by Jarasandh to be what? Causeless mercy of Krishna. They considered it to be causeless mercy of Krishna. Because we can imagine they were kings with mighty powers and all the opulence at their disposal, all kinds of sense gratification. If the king can't enjoy, who else can enjoy? And suddenly to have been, that to have been taken away from them completely and to be imprisoned in such a way that caused them to come to their senses. So they had a lot of time to think about Krishna and think about God. And of course, Krishna then eventually appears to them in this great act of benevolence towards them. And when they see Krishna, all their sinful reactions are immediately removed. And what happens when we become free of all our sinful reactions? What do we do? Yes, right. Serve Krishna. Specifically, surrender. We surrender. So they surrendered to Krishna. It's described in the first verse here we read how the ecstasy of beholding Lord Krishna, having dispelled the weariness of their imprisonment. So after this niggardly condition that they've been suffering in, it says for a long time they were imprisoned like that, to such an extent, of course they were Kshatriyas, and they would have been strong in bodily strength, and strong in mind as Kshatriyas, but over a length of time they become feeble, niggardly, and dressed feeble for lack of proper food. They'd lost all their luster and all their strength after a very long time. So now they're seeing Krishna and they're feeling ecstasy. So when we see Krishna, it's manakantam shuchapaham, that all misgivings within the mind are completely eradicated. Any doubts that we have, any reservations we have, when we see Krishna, then all those are immediately removed. And it's described that to see Krishna, the senses are like awakening from death. To see Krishna, one realizes, although you might not have known before, you might have thought you were had so many good qualities that you were so, you know, notable in so many aspects. But then when you see Krishna, it's like as if you were dead before and now you've just woken up, and all the senses become separately enlivened to experience Krishna consciousness. So as devotees, that is what we should be experiencing in spiritual life, an awakening from death. If we're really experiencing the benefits of Krishna consciousness and not just licking the outside of the honey jar, we will be experiencing that enlivenment in all our senses. In modern life, especially in religion, the religious experience is not now emphasized so much, the actual religious experience, because people more or less are following religion in external routines only. So what doesn't happen for them is the real experience of religion, which is what happens when we actually experience Krishna in reality. Yes, who said that? Yes, change of heart. That's what must happen, is a change of heart. And in that change of heart, we will become completely enlivened in all our senses. So this is a very radical thing for anybody. But in modern religion, you see that people attend mosque, church, synagogue, or whatever, and they may accept the primacy of spirit and the necessity of following so many commandments of God. But then, for the rest of the week, they have interest in so many things. Sporting interests, entertainment interests, political interests, health interests, family interests, unlimited other interests which they pursue. That's just external religion, where you go to church and you sit, listen, unmoved, unchanged, no change in heart. Year after year, this might happen. And it does happen, actually, for Kanishtha Adhikari. If we remain Kanishtha Adhikari, this could happen to us, that for year after year, we will not be in the fire of Krishna consciousness. In the Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada says that there are many devotees who think they are devotees, and they think they are Krishna consciousness. They think they are Krishna conscious. But actually, they have not accepted in their hearts Krishna as God. So if we remain Kanishka Adhikaris, there are certain impediments that we have to overcome in order to become really imbued with Shuddha Bhakti, should be able to chant Shuddha Nam. We have to advance above the material platform, because as Kanishkas, we are on the material platform, influenced by the modes of material nature. So in that sense, we may experience some happiness in the mode of goodness. But that's like, if you're lost in the, say you're lost in the forest. I don't know if anybody's ever been lost. I mean, I don't mean lost in the sense that, you know, as a child you're lost in a crowd, but that's very serious. But I mean, if you're actually lost in a place and there's no other people around, and if anybody's experienced that, it's a very frightening thing. We have examples of that. There's a forest, rainforest in Puerto Rico, where people have got, over the years, they get lost in it. It's not such a big forest, because Puerto Rico is only about 30 miles wide where the rainforest is, but people have got lost in there. And there is one story, for 3 months, one man was lost in the forest, in that rainforest. I haven't confirmed that, but there was a man recently, because it's on video, who was lost for 4 days. 4 days, that's a long time to be lost. And you certainly become very serious in that time about life or death. It's hard to imagine, but it does happen. Anybody who's you just stray from the path a little bit, and you lose your orientation. And, you know, you've just got hills, and, I mean, a tropical rainforest, you can hardly move 100 feet without a huge endeavor. Anyway, someone was saved after four days. That's actually like what is happening to the conditioned soul. He's actually lost. We sing every day, right? The blazing fire of material existence. We're lost in the blaze. It's like being lost in a blazing fire. That's actually the situation, and the living entities are alone, which is also true. So in the mode of goodness, we may experience some happiness, just like if you're in a forest and you're wandering around blind and you have nowhere to sleep at night except on the ground, and you suddenly hear the sounds of civilization, or you see the whiff of smoke coming from a house, what a relief it is, isn't it? You can imagine, from imminent death, suddenly you're rescued. So it's like that. We experience Krishna consciousness. When we experience Krishna, then we should have that awakening. But if we remain conditioned, we will not experience that, because we will be conditioned by the modes of material nature. We'll not really be able to. We cannot really, in the modes of material nature, serve and satisfy the pure devotee. It's not possible to do that. It is very difficult to satisfy, from the mundane platform, higher pure devotee. So that's the situation of a Kanishna, and he can't do that because his chanting of the holy names is just shadow, just like the performance of devotional service is shadow. It's not the real thing, it's just like a shadow. So therefore, because it's a shadow, he is not capable, he's not in a position to be able to really satisfy the pure devotees. But the pure devotee, of course, they give their mercy. That is one of the four duties of a Madhyama Adhikari, is that he must give mercy to the Balasa. The Bala. Who are the Balasa? Innocent people. And it's described in the last verse we heard here. The kings are mentioning about the Bala, how their perception of life is that this material world is everything, like a mirage in the desert. So it's the duty of the Madhyama Adhikari to educate Kanishtarikari, so he can get full grasp of Sambandha Gyan. Because that is our disability as Kanishtarikaris, that we don't have full grasp of Sambandha Gyan. Just like religionists who just go to church one day a week don't have a full grasp of Sambandha Gyan. That means they don't fully understand that they're not this material body. And we may be involved in karma, jnana, or yoga. We may have interest in karma, jnana, and yoga. Interest in satisfying our senses, profit, fame, and distinction, or mundane sexuality. We have those desires. Or desires for jnana, desire just to speculate, to understand the truth on our own terms, according to our own understanding. So this is the limitation of being Kanishtadhikari on the material platform. But by good association and faithfulness, we can advance. But what stops us from advancing is what? It's very important to know that. What stops us from advancing? What makes us happy with the status quo, and we do not want to change the status quo? This is also a symptom of Kanishtha life, that no one wants to change the status quo. Envy. Yes, that's true. Because actually, the Balasa, or innocent people, they are, yes, innocent are included in the envious. The Devesha, envious people, they are included in that because of their lack of complete grasp and understanding of Sambandha Gyan. They are included in the envious. But actually, specifically for Kanishtadhikari, it's mentioned that according to association, he either advances or regresses. To the extent that a Kanishtadhikari takes the association of mundane persons, he will regress. And as described by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, if you have equality in that, if you balance your association with the material world and with the devotees, if you balance those things, then the Kanishtha neither makes progress or goes down. He just maintains the status quo. So that means you're dabbling a little bit in Maya, right? But simultaneously, you're associating with pure devotees, or trying to, if they're available. If they're available. Because Kanishtadhikari cannot advance. We cannot advance without the association of at least Madhyamadhikaris. Why is that? Because we cannot even tell the difference. We cannot discriminate between who is a devotee and who is not a devotee. So how can we offer proper respect? That is the limitation of a Kanishtadhikari, that he cannot serve or offer proper respect to pure devotees. That is the limitation. So that is why it's very important for Madhyamadhikari, if we want to become Madhyamadhikari, that we must extend Maitri, friendship with devotees. That is one of the four obligations of Madhyamadhikari. See, as Kanishtas, we don't particularly. The only saving grace, if we're Kanishtha, is what? Is that we have Shraddha in Archana, that we accept the deities with good faith and we serve the deities. But there is no emphasis there on serving the devotee. It's only when those two are going simultaneously that the Kanishtadhikari becomes Madhyamadhikari and then engages in Abhideya, the activities of pure activities of devotional service with a view to achieving prema, bhakti. So Madhyamadhikari must give friendship. And it is essential for them, for their own progress, to graciously to offer compassion to the Balasa, in which Kanishtha is included, innocent, so that they can be educated and come to the standard of pure devotion, where they can. See, Kanishtha Adhikari, he will be approach everybody with enthusiasm in Krishna consciousness. But he doesn't have that discrimination. So that when you come Madhimarikari, he does not do that anymore, but he appreciates more specifically the importance of serving pure devotee. That without that blessing of pure devotee, we cannot even become liberated. So the offering of friendship means, of course, including within that is service. Service to the devotees. Which also is very philosophical and has to be understood clearly. Service to the devotees is a very general thing. Does it mean, you know, doing someone's laundry? Or does it mean cleaning up after them or whatever? Or does it mean, what does it mean exactly, service to the devotees? There are three aspects that can be described in that matter. The first thing is, of course, the association. Secondly, there is the discussion, the Krishna Katha. And thirdly, there is the service. And the service means that with affection, you respect the Vaishnava and you offer all hospitality. It's very important that those things have to be there. That's how we, you know, actually relate to pure devotees. That has to be. Now, it's not all devotees that are worthy of that service. Kanishtha Adhikari, because he doesn't chant Shuddha Nam, he's not purified, has incoherent understanding of Sambandha, that he is not served in that way. He is not, according to Srila Bhaktivinoda, worthy of service in that way. But he has to come to the higher understanding. So we come to that higher understanding simply by following the process of devotional service. And inherent within devotional service, of course, are so many different qualities. For instance, there is satya. Truth is intrinsic, it's inherent in the performance of devotional service. And by the performance of devotional service, we move out of illusion into truth, isn't it? So what is the truth? The truth is Krishna. It is Krishna, the relationship of the living entities with Krishna, and the truth of our imprisonment within the material world, which the kings here are asking to be relieved from. So Krishna has relieved them from one prison, but then they're asking in a realized way, now you've got to get us out of the other prison, which is the material world. They're asking Krishna to do that. So we have to get out of that prison, which is created by our desire to enjoy the material world. Because of that desire, we experience good and bad in various species of life. Sadasad yonishu. We have to experience good and evil in various species of life. Jatudishtatya karma krit, forced to work, forced to activities by the modes of material nature. So it is the duty of Madhimarikari to educate, not only to educate the lower stage devotees, to make sure that they advance in their Shraddha. This is also very important, because unless he does that, there is risk that what will ensue will be lethargy and apathy to actually the austerity of spiritual life, even on that platform. If we don't do our duty in that respect, that we don't preach properly. And of course, the way that Kanishtha advances is that he hears. He hears other devotees. He hears the discussion, and he, by hearing, he comes to better understand his actual position, to understand the importance of relating to different living entities in different ways. And we go from illusion to truth. The satya is in devotional service. So with a vision of devotional service, we should see the truth in all things, because the material world is not as described by the Mayavadi philosophers, Brahma Satyam Jagat Mitya, Jagan Mitya. That is their philosophy, right? The material world is false. This is the Suric vision. If we think there's no God in control, that's it. We become Asura. We think that we can do what we like according to our own whims. That is a Suric principle, right? There is no one in control. So as devotees, we become very important as human beings, that we should be rational, because the Bala described here, if you remember that last verse we heard, one quality there is mentioned, the irrational Bala. So that is our limitation also, if we remain Kanishtari Kharis, that we will not be rational. Because it's not rational to think that we're this material body. That is irrational. Rational means to actually come to the position of Atato Brahma Jigyasa. Why do I have to suffer? So in spiritual life, if at the level of Kanishtari Kari, if we don't see or are unable to associate with higher level devotees, it's a very great problem. We can come to actually erroneous ideas and habitual bad practices. And it's very easy to delude ourselves in performing sinful activities, that because it becomes such a habit that we're okay in spiritual life. Of course, it takes a purified person to be able to, the association of purified persons, in order to show these things to us. It is very necessary. Otherwise, we may start to think, well, Prabhu, we hear this quite often. See, a Madhumari Kari, he must discriminate between these four things. Prema goes to Krishna. Compassion goes to the innocent. Friendship goes to the devotees. And he neglects the devesha, the envious person. This is very important, because if you go back to the notes that Thakur says, if devotees whimsically choose, associate with envious people on the basis of compassion to them, that their devotional service will be jeopardized by that. And Rupa Goswami, in the Nectar of Devotion, he gives those, so many primary practices of devotional service. Is it first eight, and then he gives another six? And the second group, the first two there, are rigid disassociation with non-devotees. Rigid. And also to avoid preaching to the envious. So we don't, it's very important we don't foist Harinam upon envious people, because it's a problem for everybody then. It's a problem for everybody. Because it says that, you know, devotional service performed in contradiction to the Shastra is just this disturbance. And the Shastra state that we must avoid the envious. So these kings have been amongst the Vaishya, most envious of people. And they've gotten Krishna's causeless mercy. They've totally surrendered. And they're experiencing ecstasy. They're giving their confessional, how bad they've been in the past, how grateful now. And what's going to happen is that they're going to be looked after, rehabilitated, as they say, put back on their chariots, and off they go home to what? To reintroduce pious life to the whole of their citizens. Every, you can imagine, so many kings, how many kingdoms, how much of the world that must have involved. What a great blessing that was by Lord Krishna that all those societies that the kings were ruling over, they became devotional. They reintroduced, that's the essential message of this incident, the importance of this God-given society. How nice it is in spiritual life, how everything is rational. Prabhupada said that Krishna consciousness is pure rationality, but how horrible it is to be irrational, to be included with the balasa. And that also includes us, if we are still Kanishtha Adhikaris. We don't want to be experiencing the smoke of the fire. We may have contact with the fire, but we don't want the smoke. Srila Prabhupada says, you know, the smoke's no good. It just causes it botheration. We want to be in the fire. So if we want to really be in the fire, we have to be very, very conscientious about taking good association. And also very, very conscientious, according to our level, of giving association. So, does anybody have any questions, please, or comments?
Hari
Bol.
I liked your analogy of the getting lost in the forest. You know, there's, I think, probably the number one rule in wilderness survival. If you get lost in the forest, is to follow the flow of the water. You can follow the flow of the water, eventually take you to the people. So that's like following the parampara.
Yes,
you get good. Out of the forest of illusion by following the parampara.
Thank you. That's a good one, yeah. See, that's the thing, you see. If you get lost, you lose your rationality. You wouldn't think of a thing like that. Of course, you could look at the sun also, if you keep going in one direction. Because there are so many obstacles in the material world. So many obstacles that you can bump into, become insufferable. Yes.
You mentioned that we neglect the envious persons. So we also talk about in the association of devotees. So I think it creates some kind of difficult mindset if you look at devotees, like, okay, this one is this advanced. I don't want to associate with that devotee. You know, it's a difficult thing to do, to always look how advanced is somebody, or you don't even think I'm actually advanced enough to do that. So how do you do that among the devotees?
Well, it's our duty to be intelligent enough to discriminate. It's our duty. Otherwise, how are we going to know who to associate with and who not to associate with? But it's a responsibility. I mean, it's obviously a duty. It's a responsibility to do that. And it can't be done unless you really apply yourself. Krishna consciousness. You have to study the books. You have to hear. Otherwise, how will you know? The standard is there. The shastras are given with all complete knowledge and in logical way. Science. It's a science. So we view as a science. You see the facts. See, the thing is, it's irrational for us, for instance, to think that we can neglect certain principles in spiritual life and still be okay. That's irrational. But that's very easy to be in that situation in the Kanishtha platform. In one example, of course, is not being moderate in our sensual activities. If, for instance, we overeat, you can't. According to Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, if you overeat, if you're not moderate in eating, then it's very difficult to advance in spiritual life. So it's not rational to think that we can just indulge our senses and be okay. This is an item of knowledge. Quite easy, really. You just have to accept. Yes, ma'am?
Prabhu, did you say that we should not give the holy name to the envious? I'm thinking, will we not? I mean, are we?
No, we avoid
coming,
them.
Huh?
We avoid them. Oh, to the innocent?
To the envious.
Oh, to the envious? No, the devotion. No, we avoid them.
Isn't everybody out there envious?
Pardon?
Isn't, you know, anybody coming to Krishna consciousness is,
yes,
somewhat envious.
Right.
You mean like offensive would be a more...
Well, the saving grace when we come is that we come because we have a little shraddha. That's our main qualification, is that we have that basic shraddha. Otherwise, you see, the trouble with envious people is they're very self-opinionated. And you try to instruct them, and you immediately get involved in all kinds of argumentation. That's the problem. And that's no good for anybody. It's no good for them, because they're atheistic, or, like, or, you know, best agnostic, or whatever. So we avoid them.
Okay,
and
so
the thing is, there is a risk that if we artificially pretend to be Uttamadhikaris, we see everybody as devotee. That is a risk, because actually the Madhyamarikari is indifferent to the devotee who artificially poses himself as Uttamadhikari. Mercy, the creeper to that person is neglect, and that's proper for them. So, yes, but there's another consideration, actually, although we have to also be compassionate to the devotee, the envious. If they are in trouble and they're in distress, this is also our duty to help them, if possible, definitely.
Saying reminds me of the offense, the holy name, do not preach to the faithless. So that you said shraddha. If there's some shraddha,
yes,
in yoga, you know, then they will take, or they will respond favorably.
Yes, a good person
will argue. Will, yeah.
A good person accepts instruction very easily. Someone who's envious does not. They will argue ad infinitum. See, if there's irrationality, there's no end to argument. There's no conclusion.
It also depends what kind of association we take and what association we give. Sometimes we have...
Is this a question, Mother? I'm sorry.
A comment, maybe a question.
Well, we've been discussing that, yes.
It seems like some association to an envious person would be like a sweet ball. Or, you know, initially something, someone hear the holy name. You go out and chant Hare Krishna, and so many people hear the holy name. And by hearing the holy name, even if they don't want to, they make advancement. And then gradually, their enviousness goes away. We've seen where people who were demoniac, who were tearing up books and throwing them away, but by repeatedly hearing the holy name or getting some prasadam, they actually became even devotees. So, we have to become experts. There's one quote in one of the courses that I teach that says that Prabhupada says that the devotees need to become expert in injecting Krishna consciousness by different means into the dull brains of the materialistic people. So
are you saying that we should actually give the holy name to the envious?
Yeah, we have to give it to them. And Prabhupada says in Bhagavad Gita that the devotee of the Lord is more merciful than the Lord, and he even approaches the envious people in an attempt to try and, you know, inspire them in Krishna consciousness, but not in necessarily in a situation that we're going to get into an argument with them. Sometimes you can be sneaky, tricky. I remember I was in New York, 55th Street, and it wasn't 55th Street, it was in Brooklyn, in Henry Street. And someone came to Prabhupada with this tray of balls, white balls, and Prabhupada popped one in his mouth and he said, simply wonderful. And then they said, well, Prabhupada, we're distributing these in the subways.
And Prabhupada's response, he said a whole series of things, but the ultimate conclusion was, by taking this, they will become simply wonderful. So we can make the envious simply wonderful by giving them Krishna in some way. I mean, all those crazy people at the football game, they're all benefited by hearing that holy name. And gradually their enviousness goes away. The mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
So how are we defining envy? This is not a normal use of the word or something, is it? Are we? Could you
enmity.
Go into that a little more?
Yeah. Enmity. Three things which are more or less synonymous. One is enmity. The other is hate. And hate and enmity. Yes, envy, hate, and enmity. The devasya. The envious are, there are five kinds. The first does not accept that Krishna is a God. Personal form, do not accept the personal form of Krishna. There is the skeptic, also skeptic about God. That's two. Three, thinks that God is material. Out of the material nature, and it, all that God does is give you the results of your karma. And then fourth is a person who does not accept that we're eternal servant of Krishna. And it doesn't matter what situation in life, envious person may be very well dressed, very educated, or maybe in poverty, indigent. It doesn't matter. If you believe these, then you're included with the envious. And the fifth envious person is the person that has no mercy. No mercy for other living entities. Yes, those are the envious people. And they are to be avoided. You see, that's, it's a problem because Madhyamas are quite often criticized for discriminating between who should be preached to and who shouldn't. But that's actually, if we want to advance, then we have to know that clearly.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Me and my friends got lost one time in the forest.
Oh, where was that?
In Trinidad. And it's very frightening.
Well, you were with somebody. What if you're on your own?
Well, it was about the same because we were all lost.
Yes.
So it was very frightening. There was no river. So we just got lucky. We're back. So I guess in our case, we all got lucky by getting Srila Prabhupada's book to get out of this entanglement.
Because this mercy.
Yes. And to be very guardful about spiritual advancement, we have to be conscious about, try to be very conscious about the 10 offenses. And especially the mad, we used to call it the mad elephant offense, where we offend someone. And if that do happen, we should be in that consciousness to papa vancha kalpa, to that individual, which mitigates the offense in the most positive and fast way, for my personal experience to work. That I don't see devotees doing much anymore, but sometimes devotees might think that by the continuous chanting of the Maha Mantra, they will mitigate offense that they might have committed to someone else. But that doesn't work.
That is the Shastric advice. If you're committing an offense, you keep chanting Hare Krishna.
Vanchakalpa is recommended as a remedy.
Certainly. I mean, it's the glory of Krishna that he never forgives an offense, but it's the glory of the devotees that they always forgive.
Yeah, but you have to use the proper mantra, Vanchakalpa.
Jai. Thank all the Lord Shri Prabhupada.